Case Closed, Crime Stories from the Golden Age of Radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, your weekly hour of old-time radio crime brought to you every Wednesday by RelicRadio.com. We'll hear first this week from Broadway Is My Beat, their episode from May 19th, 1950, titled The Jane Arnold Murder Case. Then it's Sherlock Holmes and A Case of Identity. That episode aired in 1948. First, here's Broadway Is My Beat.
Broadway's My Beat, from Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world.
Broadway's My Beat, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
Broadway's fury shrieks through the chasms of the city. And finally, the edge of fury washes against a doorway in a side street. The door opens and a voice asks a question.
Police?
You answer the voice and it leads you down a littered hallway. Pulls aside a frayed curtain half torn from its wooden rings. Escorts you to the center of a wooden platform circled with pale, anonymous faces and says...
There she is.
Under the naked white glare of a single spotlight lies a girl in a glittering sequin-covered suit of tights. She's like a piece of sculpture torn from its pedestal. But the faint color of death at her lips tells you it's a lie. Then the voice once more.
We would have preferred to welcome you to the IOOFB in another way in other circumstances, but...
The IOOFB?
The International Order of Fuzzy Bears.
Oh, and you're the head bear?
Oh, no. I'm only the fuzzy bear in charge of entertainment. Robert Rover. Most people call me Bob. I sort of make a hobby of entertainment. That's why the fellas, the other fuzzies, voted me...
Well, just tell me what happened, Mr. Rover.
Well, we were in the midst of our gala spring get-together. We always get together at the end of the hibernation period.
Tonight, Mr. Rover. What happened tonight?
Well, I'm trying to tell you. All of us fuzzies were having a jolly good time. Very jolly. When... I don't know what happened. I really don't know, except that girl.
Perhaps I can assist you.
Oh? You're...
He's not one of us, Mr. Clover. He's only one of the entertainers.
Please, Mr. Rover. I am Marvin the Great, a magician, a clairvoyant, a hypnotist.
And the girl?
She works with me in my act. I put her in a trance, command her to perform the wishes of our audience. Then, like this, I release her.
See? He did it again, Mr. Clover. He's been doing that for an hour or so, and she won't come out of it. Some of the bears who have been studying hypnotism tried it, too, but still she won't come out of
it. Because she is not hypnotized. She is dead. Any fool can see that. Did you not see it, too? You, from the police?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say poisoned. The color of her lips, the blue tinge. Wait. Her eyes, I'd say poisoned. Wouldn't you, Marvin?
How the girl dies is beyond my realm.
Who is she?
Huh? Oh, I have her name here on my list. Just a moment, please. Here it is. This one is Jane Arnold. Check, Jane Arnold. The other entertainers were...
Give me that list, Mr. Rover.
Why, of course.
How long have you been working with a girl, Marvin?
2 years, maybe three.
You knew her well, then?
Only as a girl I hired to give femininity to my act. I only knew her well enough to call her on the telephone and tell her I had a job for her.
Someone wanted her dead. Who would that be?
Beyond my realm.
One moment, please. I'm thinking.
Huh?
I'm thinking. I've got it.
What?
The murderer.
Tell me, too, Mr. Rover.
You say she was poisoned. Well...
Maybe.
Absolutely, she was poisoned. Why else would she die without a mark on her? She was murdered by one of us. Either a fuzzy bear or one of the entertainers. The murderer is among us.
Go on, Mr. Rover.
Well, I knew if I put my mind to it, I could solve it. Before the show, we were all being jolly, very jolly. Liquids were flowing out of paper cups into our mouths, and some into the entertainers' mouths, too. Someone slipped poison into a cup and murdered this Jane Arnold. But who? Have that, and we've got it solved.
Brilliant, Mr. Rover. For a fuzzy bear, that's brilliant. The glow wore off. The boys from Technical arrived. Photographs and prints and questions and the thousand details that attend violence. At 4 o'clock in the morning, an addition was made. Anyone or everyone in the hall could have slipped poison into Jane Arnold's drink. I told the bears to go home. and so did I. About 9, the routine started again. The questioning of the performers who had left the hall. Stop number 1, to pull the bed down from the wall apartment of Celia Stewart, dancer.
You say you're from the police?
That's right.
Please come in. Sit down, please.
Thanks.
Ernie! Ernie, we got a visitor. Ernie's my husband, Mr. Clover. Ernie!
You calling me, Celia? You calling?
Pardon me, Mr. Clover. Oh, Ernie, come on. Come on, get up. Ernie, stop it. Come on, we've got a visitor. There we are. This is my husband, Mr. Clover. Ernie, Mr. Clover.
Hello, Ernie.
Hello. I fell down. Would you like a drink, Mr. Clover? Do you think it's too early to have a drink?
Thanks, not now.
Waldo would never join me either. He was a good boy. Did you know Waldo, Mr. Clover?
No,
He was a good boy.
He was a fine boy, Ernie.
But he ran away. He ran away, Celia. Why did he go? You, Mr. Clover, tell me why he ran away.
I don't know, Mrs. Stewart.
Waldo and Ernie were a team, a ventriloquist team.
The best.
The best, Ernie.
Waldo was... Ernie is a ventriloquist and Waldo...
Waldo sat on my lap and talked to me. No one talks to me anymore.
I do, Ernie.
Oh, yeah. You do.
You don't understand, do you, Mr. Clover? Ernie had a dummy, Waldo. That was the act. Somehow Waldo got lost. You see what it's done to Ernie.
Why doesn't he get another one and make one?
Oh, you laugh. He's done that. He can't get another dummy to talk to him.
Oh. About last night, Mrs. Stewart.
I read about it. I'm sorry about it.
Why did you leave before the entertainment was over?
If you've seen my act, you'd know why. Besides, I had Ernie to take care of.
Ernie was there?
I don't leave Ernie alone, Mr. Clover.
Did you know Jane Arnold?
Of course. Dozens of us, Mr. Clover, in New York. Entertainers, we call ourselves. We work club dates and conventions, social. We bump into each other sometimes.
I see.
I didn't kill her. That's what you're trying to ask me. Everybody liked her.
I liked her. She liked Waldo. I liked her. Mr. Clover.
Uh-huh.
Have you seen Waldo? No? No one has seen Waldo. Where is he, Celia? Where is he?
His body, his hands, his eyes pleaded in a beggar's whimper. Then he gave up. Ernie crumpled to the floor again. And the agony inside him took hold and shook him. His wife watched him for a moment, went over and spoke quietly to him.
Ernie, get up, Ernie, please. Get up. Ernie.
And I got out. The second on the list of entertainers was Joe Lilly, described as a comedian, sight or talk. Can be reached through Rialto Agency on West 45th. At the agency, a scrub woman told me no one was in. They were never in. If I wanted Joe Lilly, try Charlie's Bar and Grill. That's where the clients hung out, waiting for a call. Moaning it up and waiting for a call. At Charlie's Bar and Grill, they pointed out the comedian to me. They knew that because he was the only one in the joint laughing.
Hey, don't it kill you? Don't it kill you where it hurts, huh? When a dame says to him, "But chief, what do we do when the feathers kills you, huh?" Close your eyes because I got another one.
Joe Lilly?
Yeah, who else, friend? Yeah, but go away because I'm entertaining a group of friends. A point killer. The thoroughfares are lousy with point killers.
A word, Joe. That's all I'll need. A word to a policeman.
Hey, don't go away, friends. Let's catch the man's routine. Could be a lot of rich material in it. That's right. Don't go away. You're my friends.
Last night, Joe, you had a...
Had a call? Yeah, I had a call. At the IOOFB. Ask me what the initials stand for. Go on, somebody. Ask me.
A girl was murdered there.
Jean Arnold. Yeah, I read about it. The Mirror had an item about it.
You didn't get a chance to go on, did you, Joe?
No, I didn't. All those fuzzy bears were deprived of a finale of shock entertainment. Fuzzy bears?
Why did you leave?
Well, I saw something was amiss with a girl, so I left. I figured a murder was a top act to top.
How did you know it was murder?
How did you know it right off like that? I read in the mirror how you knew right off. You got a good notice, friend.
You knew Jane?
Well, we've worked benefits, parties, street corners. I've teased her. That's how much I know her. Not well enough to kill her.
You drank with her before the show?
Everybody drank with Jane. Everybody drank with everybody.
Maybe you forgot. Maybe you were alone with her in her dressing room and you gave her a drink.
I didn't forget. I wasn't alone with her in her dressing room because there was no dressing room. There never is. We dressed in the men's library.
You went right home?
I came here. My friends will be pleased to tell you because I bought them a drink on a cup.
Where were you before the show?
Here. Every day. All day. I don't make a move. There isn't someone knows it. My home away from home.
Don't leave it, Joe. We may give you a call to entertain down at headquarters.
Hi, Danny.
Hello, Tartaglia. What have you got?
Among other things, Danny, a theory. A theory as to the decease of Jane Arnold.
Okay, let's have it.
Got you on tender hooks, huh? Now, this theory that I got is not my own, but belongs to the casebook of my favorite magazine detective, Frisbee Novotny.
Him again, huh?
Yeah. Frisbee Novotny had a similar case of a girl being found dead under similar circumstances. However, in the last paragraph, he revealed that the girl was not dead at all.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it turns out this girl could hold her breath for days. Her daddy used to be a pearl diver, and...
What have you got on Jane Arnold?
Dr. Dasinski, the coroner, says she is indeed dead from a deadly type poison. And all this. The personal effects of Jane Arnold as revealed by the contents of her purse.
Mm-hmm. Keys, lipstick, cigarette lighter, baggage check, cigarettes, compact.
Danny, did you notice the baggage check was 6 months old?
Huh?
Yeah, look at it. A baggage check from the Strand Hotel. The date stamped on it says it's 6 months old.
Hey, you did good, Tartaglia. You did fine. Frisbee'd be proud of you.
I'm sorry, the baggage for this check, C-154, it's not here.
Where is it?
Unclaimed baggage held for longer than 6 months is opened and its contents sold in auction to defray storage charges.
Oh, and that's what happened to it?
Yes, it was sold in auction yesterday.
Yesterday? To whom?
I can tell you that. I keep fine records. The manager, Mr. Fonda, always tells me that. Here, right here.
Mm-hmm.
The contents of M154 were sold to Mr. Lou Granger, 1312 14th Street.
All right. You want a room, mister? Hey, wait a minute. Where's your bag?
Police. What's the room number of Lou Granger?
Granger, that's, let's see, room 4, right down there, near the elevator.
Thanks.
Hey, don't go busting in there because you can't do it.
Oh, why not?
Well, he's got a sign on his door that says, don't disturb. Anyhow, I rapped on his door just 15 minutes ago so the cleaning lady could get in. No answer.
We'll disturb him. You got your keys?
Sure. What's he done?
Not a thing.
Oh. Well, why you police come around?
This Granger's room?
Yeah. Hey, why are you police?
Open it.
Okay. Hey, Granger. It was bottled. My, such a thirst.
Come on, Granger. Wake up, Granger. Granger.
Dead to the world, ain't he?
Poison. This drink is poison.
Yeah, that stuff is poison. Dead?
Dead.
Well,
did this man have any visitors recently?
Well, I don't know. Maybe. Could have. But I don't know.
What about him? What do you know about him?
A show business guy. Had an act with dummies. Through his voice.
Ventriloquist?
Yeah, that's a word. With one of them dumb... Hey. Hey, look. Gee, I guess Granger did have visitors.
Yeah.
Strange.
He said it about right. Strange. The thing that stared at both of us was 2 feet high, dressed in red-checked muslin. A doll, a dummy. And there was pain on its face, as if it had something to do with a rip in its side. Its hand was thrust into the tear, and the doll stared at us, and there was pain on its face.
You are listening to Broadway's My Beat, written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin, and starring Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
How well do you know the history of your army? For example, do you know when the first Engineer Corps was established? Although there was a separate engineering department in the Continental Army during the Revolution, it wasn't until 1802 that an act of Congress authorized and established an Engineer Corps in the United States Army. The first corps consisted of two assistant engineers, two other assistants, and 10 cadets, all under the command of Chief Engineer Major Jonathan Williams. Thus, another page was added to the history of your United States Army.
Broadway is beside itself when it feels the warm breath of summer at its cheek. Its fancy is lately turned to thoughts of sleeping in the park, night ball games, and it stands on street corners considering the girls in their summer dresses. And until there's a favorable breeze, there's always the headlines to look at. Magician's assistant murdered, the early edition screamed. And later, ventriloquist murdered, terrifying, sensational, grotesque. Or as Sergeant Tartaglia broke it to me the next day at headquarters.
It's refreshing, Danny.
What is?
These mints. Go ahead, take one.
All right. Anything else, Gino?
Well, now that you ask, Danny, yes. Yes, indeed.
You'll tell, huh?
A man is waiting to see you. A man who gives his name as Ernie Stewart.
I thought he might drop in. He alone?
Yeah, Danny, yeah. Why?
Nothing. Show him in.
This way in to see Danny Clover, Mr. Stewart. Sit down. Sit down, right over there.
Thank you. You found him, didn't you, Mr. Clover? You found Waldo.
Why do you say that?
Don't play with me. Don't play. People have been for all this time.
Take it easy.
I saw his picture in the paper. You found Waldo with that man in the room. Give him to me.
All right. Is this...
Waldo! Oh, Waldo, Waldo, boy.
How are you, fella? You miss me?
Hi, Ernie. I hurt, Ernie.
Danny!
What did you know?
Somebody ripped me, Ernie. I hurt.
You'll be all right. I'll fix you so you'll be all right. Look. Look, Mr. Clover, Waldo talks to me. I'm all right again. Everything's all right again.
Uh-huh.
We're going home, Waldo. You're going to like that?
You'll fix me so I won't hurt, won't you?
Hey, Danny, this guy's great. Throwing his voice like that and making that dummy talk.
Hey, Ernie, who's a baldy?
That starts in Tartaglia, Waldo.
Likewise to you.
Ernie, tell me about Jane Arnold.
So pretty.
She's dead.
I knew it was going to happen. The way Marvin treated her.
That Marvin? A magician? All he was good for was being mean to Jane. Isn't that right, Ernie?
You're so right, Waldo. You're always right.
Oh, you know it, Ernie. Well, why did you let him take me away from you?
Then Waldo suggested to Ernie that they had taken enough of my precious time. Besides, Waldo was tired and drained after all he'd been through. Waldo wanted to go home. Ernie apologized to the doll, lifted it to his chest, and carrying Waldo like a babe, walked out of the office. Sergeant Gino Tartaglia and I sat looking at each other. That didn't get us anywhere, so I put a call through to Detective Mugovan. I told him to find the magician, Marvin the Great. In an hour, Mugovan had found him. Marvin had a week's booking in a tired vaudeville house on Upper Broadway. The double feature Western was on, so probably Marvin was in his dressing room. Marvin was.
Do you mind, please, just to hand me my hairpiece, Mr. Clover?
Huh?
The hairpiece, the toupee. There, on the severed mannequin's head.
Oh, yeah. Here you are.
You're welcome. Tragic days for magic.
Jane Arnold's death, that's tragic too, huh, Marvin?
So tragic. It looks all right.
Huh?
The hairpiece, Mr. Clover. The glue. It does not show. The line where the glue takes the hair to my face, that does not show.
We're talking about Jane Arnold.
Why do you bother me with this dead girl? Why do you come before performance and bother me?
I plead for you. You didn't like Jane, huh, Marvin?
I told you the other time, Jane to me is nothing. To like or to dislike. I paid her for being the girl in my act, that's all.
I heard you mistreated her.
That's a lie. An evil lie. I do not mistreat even an animal. I have animals in my act. Go, ask them. Who told you such a lie?
It doesn't matter. I heard it.
You see? Even you admit it's a lie.
Oh, wait a minute.
Ernie told you, huh? Ernie Stewart? That miserable alcoholic? That apology for a man who has no dignity or pride without a rag doll in his arms? I think Waldo is the man and Ernie the dummy.
Tell me more about Ernie, Marvin.
Gladly. You do not know about ventriloquists, Mr. Clover. They are a strange group of men. A dummy is their soul, their wit, their being. Ernie tried to be a man without Waldo.
Explain it to me.
He tried to make time, as you say, with Jane. Jane would have no part of the shell of a man. Perhaps this infuriated Ernie. Huh, Mr. Clover?
Marvin, you're on.
Yes, excuse me, please. I'm wanted for my performance.
The great Marvin walked through the door with a flourish, carrying his props behind him. The only thing left of him in the dressing room was a surplus rabbit who seemed impressed with what Marvin had pulled out of his hat. Ernie had been friendly with Jane. Jane was uninterested. Lou Granger had turned up dead with Ernie's pride and joy, a dummy named Waldo. Ernie was a man with a lot of motives. Back at headquarters, Sergeant Tartaglia had a dandy routine that also ended in a flourish. A transcript of a phone conversation to Lieutenant Danny Clover from Joe Lilly. Subject, Ernie Stewart. Remarks, please meet Joe Lilly at the bar, not the grill of Charlie's Bar and Grill. Important. I went there.
Can you stand me this way, Mr. Clover?
What way, Joe?
In a blue and pensive mood. A comic beating back the tears. How do you make a joke about a murderer?
A nimble boy like you.
A nimble boy like me. Suddenly, I become a guy with a burden. A friend of mine turns out to be a killer.
Ernie Stewart.
Yeah. I'm informing him.
You had your chance when I talked to you the last time. What happened to your conscience since then?
Nothing. I leveled then. Just that the circumstances have changed. Now Lou Granger's dead, too. That's the circumstance.
Go on.
Mr. Clover. In the bottom of a shot glass lies the answer to all the questions. All the great questions. Yesterday, I went visiting Mr. Clover. To the flat of Ernie and Celia Stewart. Social call for laughs. That household needs laughs. In my great B way, I tried. Ernie didn't listen to me. He couldn't. He was out like a light.
And
the phone call came. Celia answered it. She talked with Lou Granger. Lou wanted Ernie to come down and pick something up. Celia seemed happy. She said she'd send Ernie as soon as he woke up. You know what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Ernie went down to Lou's. Lou had Waldo the dummy. Ernie killed him.
Yeah, Ernie would do that for Waldo.
Yeah, Ernie would.
What? Oh, it's Mr. Clover, isn't it? You're the one who...
Yes, Miss Stewart. Is Ernie in?
No, he's out making the rounds for a job.
Oh?
Yeah, he should be back soon, though. You want to wait for him?
Yes.
Oh, please come in. I was going to call you, Mr. Clover, to thank you.
Thank me?
For what you've done for Ernie.
What did I do?
You found Waldo. When you did that, you wiped out 6 months of pain. 6 months of... Oh, it tore me apart what it was doing to Ernie not having Waldo. But you fixed that. You gave Waldo back to him.
And now Ernie doesn't need you.
Oh, What are you talking about?
You told me you never let Ernie out of your sight. He's out of your sight now. He was out of your sight when he came to my office to pick up Waldo.
I told you I let him go to you because I knew what it meant to him. Now he's looking for a job. But he still needs him. Don't ever make a mistake about that, Mr. Clover.
Ernie needed Jane Arnold, too.
Oh, you know about that. Poor Ernie. He was so lost without Waldo. He reached for anything, even Jane Arnold. I think all that time he didn't even know I was around. Someone to pick him up, to put him to bed, to whisper sleep into his ears.
Jane, how did Jane feel about Ernie?
She laughed at him. Everyone laughed at Ernie then. Laughed. Walked away from him, not laughing.
Mrs. Stewart, there was another time you let Ernie get away from you.
Oh? Oh, you mean the time when we got the call from Lou Granger?
That time.
Why shouldn't I have let Ernie go? Lou said he had Waldo. Bought him at a baggage auction at some hotel. Why shouldn't I have... Mr. Clover. Ernie? Lou?
Hi, everybody.
Hey, look who's here, Ernie. A lost and found department from the police. Maybe he came to get a reward for finding me.
Waldo, you know you're so right. We completely forgot about it. What shall we give him?
We could give him Celia, Ernie.
Put him down, Ernie. Put him down.
Yeah, put him away, Ernie. You're coming with me.
Hey, you lost your marbles. You can't part Ernie and me again. He's lost his marbles, Ernie.
What do you want with me, Mr. Clover?
Murder.
Oh, Ernie. Ernie, why? Why did you do it? That girl and Lou. Why did you have to kill him, Ernie?
Get her, will you? Get the axe.
You could have come to me, Ernie. I would have helped you. I've always helped. Oh, shut up. Shut up, Waldo. Hey, throw him away. Get rid of him. We were happy without him, Ernie. I took good care of you. We were happy.
Get away from me, Celia. Get away.
Take it easy, Ernie, boy. You've been through enough. I'll talk for you.
Yeah, what does he want to say, Waldo?
Ernie, throw him away. Kill him.
What does he want to say, Waldo?
Celia says she was happy without me. That's why she put me in the trunk, because she was jealous of me. She checked me in the baggage room at a hotel and forgot about me.
Did you do that, Celia?
Don't listen to him.
But Jane Arnold suspected that it was Celia who had gotten rid of me, and because she liked Ernie and was worried about what happened to me, she kept looking through Celia's things.
So she found the baggage check in Celia's purse?
Ooh, that must have made you angry, Celia. Ooh. Angry enough to poison her.
What about Lou, Waldo?
Oh, that was tricky. Lou called Ernie to say he had me, but Celia went down there instead. When Lou saw it was Celia who came after me instead of Ernie, he knew what Celia had been doing, so Celia had to kill him. And tried to kill me, too.
Yeah, that bothered me, Waldo. If Ernie went to Lou to pick you up, why did he leave you there?
I'm telling you, it was Celia.
Why didn't Ernie tell me all this before, Waldo?
He was sick. Without me, he can't think. You wanted a murderer, Mr. Clover. Well, there she is.
I'll kill him. He won't take you away from me, Ernie. Give it to me. Give it to me.
Ernie!
You monster! I'll tear you. I'll break you like the girl, like Lou. Get him!
The fingers ripped at the cheap cloth, scattered it, tore away the laughing mouth. There was nothing left of Waldo. Wood shavings, the broken face and rags. And standing there receiving it as if Waldo's death were his own death, Ernie. Then the woman, the murderess, fell to her knees and her voice...
We can be together now, Ernie. See? We can be together now.
Broadway leaps into the night. The sound it makes is the rasp of life deep inside the earth, the hiss of neon and the gaudy laugh. They melt together, and the sound you get is shock. But there's another, the teardrop and the sigh. No one listens because no one hears. It's Broadway, the gaudiest, the most violent. The lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway. My beat.
Broadway's My Beat stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover with Charles Calvert as Tartaglia. The program was produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. The musical score was composed and conducted by Alexander Courage. Included in tonight's cast were Stan Waxman, Elliot Reed, Mary Lansing, Herb Butterfield, Jerry Hausner, and Hi Averback. From New York City, the makers of Clipper Craft Clothes for Men and 1036 leading retail stores from coast to coast present the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. This week's adventure, A Case of Identity. Well, here we are, as usual, about to pay our weekly respects to our favorite raconteur, the good Dr. Watson. What about tonight's story, Doctor?
Tonight I have prepared a little challenge for you and our radio friends. Yes, the story I'm going to tell is one of Holmes' more mental adventures. It has its bizarre moments, of course, but still, all in all, its solution is fairly obvious. As you know, Holmes was the world's greatest master of the science of deduction. As a matter of fact, he unraveled this particular problem without moving from his armchair. I wonder how many of our listeners have learned enough of Holmes' methods to do the same.
Well, I think I can make a fair stab at it, Doctor, if the clues aren't too involved, that is.
Oh, no, no. All the clues are right out in plain sight, Mr. Harris. All you have to do is listen for them and make your own deductions. Oh, but before we become too involved with hidden clues, hadn't we better discuss a few clues to the secret of good grooming without straining the pocketbook?
Good idea, Doctor. If you need a fine new suit for business or a good-looking sport jacket for weekend wear and really want your dollars to do double duty, here's how. Insist on Clipper Craft Clothes. Famous for stretching your dollars, for giving you positively amazing value, is the fine local independent store in your community that sells Clipper Craft. Despite rising costs of materials and manufacturing, you can still buy long-wearing, beautifully tailored Clipper Craft suits for only $40 to $47.50, luxurious tropical worsteds for only $33.75 to $40, and smart sport jackets for only $26.50. It's the Clipper Craft plan and the Clipper Craft plan alone that makes Clipper Craft clothes possible at these low prices. Concentrating the buying power of 1036 of the nation's finest stores from coast to coast, providing steady year-round operation, reducing manufacturing and distribution costs. And the savings go to you. Simply compare Clipper Craft with clothes selling for many dollars more. And now, Dr. Watson, back to the adventure you think we should be able to solve for ourselves.
Right, Mr. Harris. It was during the middle years of our joint occupancy of the lodgings in Baker Street. Holmes and I sat relaxed in two easy chairs on either side of the living room fire. Holmes' long legs stretched out in front of him, his head wreathed in the smoke from his favorite pipe, a horrible black, greasy old clay affair that he coddled as if it were a child. Well, we had just finished an excellent breakfast, and Holmes was in the philosophic mood that so often accompanies the process of digestion.
Strange thing, life, eh, Watson? Infinitely stranger than anything the mind of man could invent.
Yes, I know that's one of your pet theories, and I dare you to put it to the test. Now, take today's paper. If you can find anything bizarre in that, I'll buy you a new smoking jacket.
I don't want a new smoking jacket, Watson, but I'll take up your challenge. Choose any article, any paragraph at all on this page, and I'll guarantee to find something outlandish.
Very well. Here, take the very first heading. Husband's cruelty to his wife. Now, there's a half column of print about that, but I know what it's about almost without reading it. There's the other woman, the drink, the push, the blow. No writer could invent anything more crude or commonplace.
Your example, Watson, happens to be rather unfortunate. The husband was a teetotaler. There was no other woman, and the cruelty complained of was that he had the habit of winding up every meal by taking out his false teeth and hurling them at his wife, which you'll allow is an action any literary man would hardly be able to make believable.
Well, maybe so, but that's just an exception.
Life is made up of exceptions, Watson. There's one now, standing on the pavement on the opposite side of the street.
You mean that large, hebe-like young woman with the enormous boa around her neck and the curling red feather in her hat?
Yes.
Well, look how she oscillates backward and forward, and the way she fidgets with her glove buttons.
Oscillation on the pavement always means an affaire de coeur. She would like advice, but it's not sure that the matter may not be too delicate for communication.
She's decided to take the plunge. Here she comes across the road like a swimmer leaving the bank. I say, perhaps she's been seriously wronged.
No, Watson. In that case, the woman no longer oscillates. She pulls out the bell wire to the front door. You hear that, Watson? Decidedly fluttery. The maiden is not so much angry as perplexed and possibly grieved. Oh, but here she comes. Come in, come in.
I hope I'm not intruding. This is Mr. Sherlock Holmes, the detective.
Yes. Won't you sit down? This is my friend and colleague, Dr. Watson.
Pleased to meet you.
I'm delighted.
My dear young lady, don't you find that with your short sight, it's a little trying to do so much typewriting?
Oh, I did at first, and that's a fact. But I've got so now I know where the letters are without look. Oh, but how did you know? Someone's told you about me.
Oh, don't look so alarmed, my dear. That's just a bit of detection. Mr. Holmes can tell things like that by looking at you. It's his way of showing off.
Oh, I see, but it did take me aback, your knowing things like that.
It's my business to know things. I knew you used the typewriter from the appearance of your fingertips and the double line pressed into the plush above your wrists. It was equally obvious that you're nearsighted from the marks left on either side of the nose by your pince-nez. So you see, my dear
My name's Sutherland, Mary Sutherland.
So you see, my dear Miss Sutherland, there's nothing terrifying in my conclusions.
Well, no, not when you explain it like that.
And now, perhaps you'll tell me why you came away to consult me in such a hurry that you managed to put on two odd shoes.
Why, bless my soul, so I did. The right one's my Sunday pair.
Yes, you must have been rather agitated when you left home.
Yes, I did bang out of the house, and who wouldn't? It made me fair angry to see the easy way Mr. Windybanks, oh, that's my father, took it all. He wouldn't go to the police. He just sat there and said there was no harm done and everything would come right in the end. So finally I got mad and told father I was coming to you myself.
You say your father, but surely you mean your stepfather, since the name's not the same.
Yes, he's my stepfather. Mother makes me call him father, though it sounds kind of funny, him being only 5 years and 2 months older than myself.
I see. How recently did your mother marry this Mr. Windybanks?
Oh, about 2 years ago it was, Mr. Holmes. And I'll admit I wasn't very pleased, seeing as it was so soon after father's death, and him a man nearly 15 years younger than herself.
Enough to start complications in any home, eh, Holmes?
Right. But please continue, Miss Sutherland. I gather your father left your mother fairly well off.
Yes, sir, he did. You see, father was a plumber in Tottenham Court Road, and he left a tidy business behind him. After he went, mother carried it on. Although I must say that William, Mr. Hardy, father's foreman, did most of the work. And a good thing he made of it, too.
This Mr. Hardy, was he your father's age?
Oh, no, sir. He was just 2 years older than me. The fact is, we had a sort of an understanding till this year Mr. Windybanks came along.
Oh, and he didn't approve of Mr. Hardy?
Oh, it weren't that so much as that he didn't approve of the plumbing business. Said it wasn't high class.
Oh.
Mr. Windybanks is a very superior gentleman himself, Mr. Holmes. Travels in wines for Westhouse and Marbank, the claret importers in 10 Church Street. Oh, a real top he is.
I see.
Yes, sir. So after him and mother got married, he made us sell the business. They got £4,700 for the goodwill and the interest. But Mr. Hardy said it was practically giving it away. And so him and my stepfather had an argument. And my stepfather told Will to clear out and never darken his door again.
Hmm, quite theatrical.
Yes, my stepfather's like that. Well, Will says he's off to Birmingham. And will I come with him? And I says, well, I can't hardly be expected to leave me own mother. So then he gets mad and biffs off.
Without giving you a chance to change your mind?
Well, yes.
And how is he doing in Birmingham?
Very nicely, I hear. Got his own shop and all. Oh, not that I write to him. I wouldn't send him a word if I was dying, I wouldn't.
Of course, serves him right for not being more persuasive.
Yes, sir. Oh, but that's neither here nor there, Mr. Holmes. Fact is, I don't know why I even mentioned Will Hardy, except that I'm so upset in my mind, my tongue kind of wags on by itself. Let's see, where was I?
Your mother had just sold the plumbing business for something over $4,000. You inherited part of that, I presume?
Oh, no, Mr. Holmes. I've got my own money, outside of the plumbing business, that is.
Oh?
It was left to me by my Uncle Ned in Auckland. It's in New Zealand stock, paying me 4%. Gives me £100 a year, it does.
Then the capital amounts to around £2,500.
Yes, sir, but I can't touch that. Just the income.
Quite a tidy little amount. I believe a single lady can do very nicely on £60 a year.
Oh, I could do on even less than that, Mr. Holmes. I'm a good one at managing things. But so long as I live at home, I don't want to be a burden to them, so I let them have the use of it while I'm staying there.
You mean you give the money to Mr. Windybanks?
Oh, no, Mr. Holmes. I draws it out every quarter and pays it over to my mother.
That's very generous of you, Miss Sutherland.
Oh, it's no hardship. I do pretty well with what I earn at typewriting. Makes me quite self-supporting, as you might say.
Yes, these independent, modern young women. Soon they'll be competing with men in business.
Oh, no, sir. I'm sure I wouldn't presume to be as bold as that.
Well, to resume, we find you are a young lady very comfortably fixed.
Well, I'm not exactly rich, Mr. Holmes, but I'd give all I have to know what's become of Mr. Hosmer Angel.
Hosmer Angel, eh? Quite a romantic name.
Oh, yes. And he was romantic, Mr. Holmes. Recited Browning, he did.
Sounds quite devoted.
Oh, yes, sir, he was. I could swear he was. And now he's gone, too. Disappeared like into thin air. And naturally, I'm anxious about him, being as it's the second time I've been left in the lurch, as you might say. I feel a bit sensitive about it.
Of course. Had you quarreled?
Oh, no, sir. We was as affectionate as two cooing doves. Mother said it used to make her quite sick to watch us.
Oh,
not that she wasn't all for Hosmer. That she was. Helped me to keep it from father and all.
Oh, then your father didn't know about this new admirer.
No, sir. That is, not until later. And then he never really saw him.
And how did you first meet this Mr. Hosmer Angel?
Well, Mr. Holmes, I met him at the gasfitter's ball.
How romantic.
Oh, yes, sir, it was. The gasfitters used to send father tickets while he was alive, and afterwards they kept on sending them to me and mother. Mr. Windybanks didn't wish us to go. He never did wish us to go anywhere. If I so much as wanted to go to a Sunday school treat, he would get quite mad about it.
Rather unreasonable.
Yes, sir. Well, it happened that the week of the ball, he had to go to France on business, so he wasn't there to make a scene when mother and me went. It was a lovely ball, Mr. Holmes. I wouldn't have missed it for anything. It was there I met Hosmer. He was a lovely dancer. You should have seen him do the polka.
Swept you quite off your feet, I've no doubt.
Yes, sir. Well, he called next day to see if Mother and I had got home safe the night before. And after that, I went out once or twice for walks with him. And things was going along as smooth as you could wish. And then Father came home and Hosmer couldn't come to the house anymore.
No?
No, sir. Father didn't like me to have young men come to the house. Said it didn't look well for a young girl to have followers.
Rather a tyrant, eh?
Oh, yes, sir. But pretty soon, he had to go off to France again for a couple of weeks, so I started walking out with Hosmer again.
And this Hosmer made no attempts to see you in the meantime?
No, sir. I wanted to, but Mother said she didn't think it was safe. Oh, he wrote to me every day, Hosmer did. Oh, here, I've brought the letters. I thought they might give you a clue.
Quite right. We'll look them over later. Am I to take it that you and Mr. Angel had, understanding?
Yes, sir. We were engaged after the first walk we took together.
The first worker, eh, Holmes?
Watson, don't interrupt. What was Mr. Angel's business, Miss Sutherland?
He was a cashier in an office in Leadenhall Street.
What office?
Oh, that's the worst of it, Mr. Holmes. I don't know.
Where did he live, then?
Oh, he slept on the premises.
And you don't know his address?
No, sir. Except that it was Leadenhall Street.
Where did you address your letters?
Leadenhall Street Post Office, to be left till called for. He said if they was to come to the office, he'd be ragged by the other clerks. I offered to typewrite them like he did his, but he wouldn't have that. Said that when I wrote them myself, it seemed like there was something of me in them. That'll show you how fond he was of me, Mr. Holmes. He was always thinking of little things like that.
Yes, quite suggestive. Can you remember any other little things about Mr. Hosmer Angel? Any little peculiarities?
He was a very shy man, Mr. Holmes. He'd rather walk with me in the evening than in the daylight. because he said he liked to hold my hand, but he didn't want to be conspicuous.
Very considerate and gentlemanly.
Oh, yes, sir, he was a thorough gentleman, with the silkiest brown beard. Even his voice was soft-like. He told me he'd had quinsy and swollen glands when he was young, and it left him with a weak throat.
How unfortunate.
Yes, sir. His eyes were kind of weak, too, like mine, and he wore tinted glasses against the glare. I'd say he was about 5'5" and had small hands and feet.
I see. And what happened when Mr. Windybanks, your stepfather, returned to France?
Well, I wrote Hosmer, and he came round to the house, and he said I'd have to marry him before Father came back, as he couldn't stand the separation any longer. So I asked Mother, and she said, why not? Every girl was entitled to her own husband. Oh, Mother was all for Hosmer from the beginning, almost more than I was myself.
So you got married?
Well, no. Well, that is, not quite.
Oh, what happened?
Well, the wedding was set for yesterday morning. We thought it best to make it a quiet ceremony. It was to be at St. Saviour's Church, with a wedding breakfast afterwards at the St. Pancras Hotel. Well, about 9 o'clock, Mother and me was all dressed and waiting for Hosmer. I was a bit upset, I guess. You know how a bride feels, Mr. Holmes. Oh, dear, I'm that nervous. I don't know whether I ought to get married or not.
Don't you fret, Mary. All brides is like that. Why, when I was married to your father, I was so jumpy I split both me gloves.
Oh, I know, but I haven't known Hosmer very long, Mother. Maybe I oughtn't to jump off the deep end like this.
What's the good of waiting, Mary? Better get married now before your father gets back.
Yes, I suppose so. Oh, dear me, I wish my shoes wasn't so tight.
Shh, here comes Hosmer now.
Don't he look handsome with that flower in his buttonhole and all?
No, you stay here, Mary. I'll answer it. A bride should act shy-like on a wedding day. Good morning, Hosmer. How's the groom?
Good morning, Mother. Oh, I'm fine. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Hosmer. What's the matter? You look kind of white.
Oh, I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, I'm all right, too, Hosmer.
Well, we better be shoving off. I got a hansom waiting outside.
Oh, but Hosmer, it's such a little way, and hansoms is expensive. Oh,
you don't think that any bride of mine is going to walk on her wedding day?
Now, who can that be? Hosmer, you're as full of jumps as a kangaroo. Now, I'll go. What is it? Telegram? Oh, thank you. It's a telegram.
Maybe somebody's died.
I'm almost afraid to look.
But here, let me. I'm used to these things. Expect me home today. Erasmus G. Windybanks.
Father! Father's coming home. What if he gets here before...
Now, don't lose your nerve. You're of age, remember, so it don't matter how he raves afterwards.
Oh, Mary, promise you won't let him tear us apart.
No, no.
Swear it, Mary. Now, where's the Bible?
Mary's carrying mine, the one I got married with. Both times.
All right. Now, put your left hand on that Bible and swear that whatever happens, you will always be true to me and to me only.
But what could happen?
Oh, you never know. Now swear it, Mary, for my sake. Swear it.
Yes, Mary. Why not do as Hosmer asks?
All right. I swear.
Oh, good. Now then, let's get on with it.
Yes, Hosmer. Oh, dear. Is my bonnet on straight?
Yes, yes. Only hurry. Mr. Windybanks may get back any minute.
Mary, don't forget your flowers.
No, Mother.
Well, hurry, hurry. Now, here's the cab. You first, Mother. Now, easy, don't upset the cab. Now, Mary, that's right.
Aren't you coming too, Hosmer?
No, there isn't room. I'd muss your dress. I'll hail another cab. Oh, yes, there's a four-wheeler now. Hey, cabby! Now, you go on. I'll follow after.
See you at the church, Hosmer. St. Saviour's driver. Yes, Hosmer got the other cab. It's foreigners.
Oh, my knees are knocking together like anything.
Now, hush up, Mary. Anyone would think you didn't want to get married.
Well, maybe I do, and maybe I don't.
Well, just hold your breath, and it'll be over in no time now. Here's the church. You get out first and mind your dress. That's it. Now, help me. Here, not so fast. I'm no blinking acrobat. That's it. Here you are, cabbie.
Oh, here comes Hosmer's four-wheeler now.
Yes, saviors like you asked for.
Why doesn't he get out?
Give him time. Maybe his knees is shaky, too.
Come on, sir. What ails the man?
Mother, something's wrong with Hosmer.
Oh, stuff.
I'm going to see.
Wake up there.
I'll speak to him, cabbie. What? The cab's empty.
What?
Something's happened to Hosmer. He's gone and left me waiting at the church.
Every day is value day when you insist on clothes by Clippercraft. Yes, we have to know our values are really great when we suggest you compare Clippercraft with clothes selling for very much more, which is exactly what we do suggest. Because there's a great big idea behind Clippercraft clothes in the form of the famous Clippercraft plan. You get the benefit of great savings made by concentrating the buying power of 1,036 of the nation's finest stores from coast to coast. Yes, the Clippercraft plan really streamlines the fine old craft of clothes making. When you can get such remarkably fine quality in suits for only $40 to $47.50, in tropical worsteds for only $33.75 to $40, and in sport jackets for only $26.50, why pay more? For selling expensive clothes at inexpensive low prices at the nation's finest stores is the great big idea behind the Clippercraft plan. That's why men who know insist on Clippercraft clothes. So be sure to visit the Clippercraft store in your city.
These leading stores in the metropolitan area are proud to add their names to Clippercraft in your suits, top coats, sport jackets, and tropicals. In Manhattan, Saks 34th, Broadway at 34th. John Wanamaker Men's Stores, Broadway at 8th and 67 Liberty Street. In Brooklyn, Abraham and Strauss. In Newark, New Jersey, Boulevard Men's Shop, Kresge Newark. And in Jamaica, the B&B Clothes Shop, 16408 Jamaica Avenue.
And now back to Baker Street, where we find Dr. Watson commiserating with the young lady who has been left waiting at the church.
A shameful way for any gentleman to act, deserting his bride at the altar.
Oh, no, Dr. Watson, I'm sure he didn't do that. Not on purpose, that is. He was too kind for that. And then there's that pledge I gave him.
Oh, you think he foresaw some unforeseen danger and that's why he made you take the oath?
Yes, sir.
Have you any notion what it could have been?
No, sir.
How did your father take it? I presume he found out.
Oh, yes, sir. He was quite consoling, really.
Remarkable.
Oh, it drives me half mad to think of it, Mr. Holmes. It's not as if it was the first time I'd been disappointed.
I understand. I shall be delighted to glance into the matter for you, Miss Sutherland. Now, let me advise you to turn the whole matter over to me and don't let your mind dwell on it any further. Above all, try to let Mr. Hosmer Angel vanish from your memory, as he's done from your life.
Then you don't think I'll ever see him again?
I'm afraid not.
Oh, dearie me. You've been very kind, Mr. Holmes, I'm sure. I don't know how to thank you.
Not at all, Miss Sutherland.
Well, good day, gentlemen. Oh. Where's my hanky? Oh, here it is. Oh, dearie me. Another romance blighted.
Holmes, what a horrid mess of bottles and test tubes. Yes, smells of hydrochloric acid.
Marvelous, my dear Watson, marvelous.
I don't believe you've budged out of this room since that poor young lady left early this morning.
No, it wasn't necessary.
Then you've solved it?
Certainly. It was bisulfate of baritone.
No, I mean the mystery of the disappearing bridegroom.
Oh, that. There never was any mystery in that affair, Watson. Pretty self-evident, don't you think?
No, can't say I do.
Oh, really? But I let you look at Mr. Hosmer's love letters.
But they were typewritten, even to the signature.
Yes, that's what's really suggestive.
Now, what's that?
Mr. Windybanks, I fancy.
You mean the girl's father, stepfather?
Quite. I sent off a note to him this morning to his place of business.
But I must say, Holmes.
And this afternoon, I received this business-like reply on Westhouse and Marbank stationery, saying he'd be here at 6 o'clock. Come in, come in. Ah, Mr. Windybanks.
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
This typewritten note was from you, on which you set the time for this appointment at 6 o'clock?
Yes, Mr. Holmes. I'm afraid I'm a trifle late. It's about Miss Sutherland's missing suitor, eh?
Quite.
I'm sorry she's troubled you, Mr. Holmes. But you know what young girls are. Besides, it's a useless expense. Because how in the name of this and that can you expect to locate Hosmer Angel?
Pardon me if I disagree with you, Mr. Windibanks, but I have every reason to believe that I have located Mr. Hosmer Angel.
Delighted, Mr. Holmes, delighted.
Yes. I wonder if anyone's ever told you that a typewriter has really quite as much individuality as a man's handwriting.
You don't say.
Oh, but I most emphatically do. Every typewriter develops its own little idiosyncrasies. Now, this note of yours, Mr. Windibanks, you'll notice that all the E's are slightly slurred, and there's a slight defect in the tail of the R.
Yes, yeah, I never noticed it before.
Obviously. Now, I have here four letters which purport to come from the missing man. In all of them, the E's are slurred and the R's tailless.
Well, I didn't come here to waste time with fantastic talk like this. If you're going to catch the man, catch him. And let me know when you succeed.
Certainly. Watson, be good enough to lock the door.
With pleasure.
Now then, Mr. Windibanks, I have caught Mr. Hosmer Angel, because you yourself are that gentleman.
But I... Well, what if I am? I didn't marry the girl, did I? It's not actionable.
No, your conduct is even worse than that. It's dishonorable and degrading. In the first place, you're the sort of scoundrel who marries an older woman for her money. Not satisfied, you want to assure yourself of the daughter's income, which you'll lose if she marries. You make her break off with her first sweetheart. And when you see it's going to be impossible to keep others from falling in love with her, you arrange to do so yourself.
It was only a joke at first.
I failed to see any humor in it.
Well, I didn't know she'd fall for me like that, did I?
You made the girl swear she'd be true and wait for you. And then you played the cad and disappeared.
Well, maybe so, and maybe not. But I'm not breaking any laws. And as long as you keep that door locked...
Quite so. Should you care to call a policeman? There's one in the street below. I'm sure your employer, Mr. Merrill Marbanks, who, by the way, is an old friend of mine, we'll be very interested in your little joke.
Oh, no, Mr. Holmes. You couldn't tell him. I'd lose my job and my social standing.
Quite so. I'll keep quiet on one condition.
Oh, yes, sir. Anything at all.
You are not to discourage any more of Miss Mary's suitors, past, present, or future.
Oh, no, Mr. Holmes. I wouldn't think of it. It was all just a little game, you see.
Yes. Well, the game's over. Watson, you may show the gentleman out.
Right. Now then.
Yes, sir. Well, good day, gentlemen. I hope you won't hold any hard feelings, Mr. Holmes. And if you ever...
Come along, no loitering, or I'll boot you downstairs. I've a good mind to do it anyway.
Well, I'm going.
The filthy blackguard. I still don't see how you spotted the man.
That typewritten letter, Watson, particularly the signature. Obviously, the man wanted to disguise his handwriting, which would have been familiar to the girl. Well, whose handwriting would have been familiar to her? Answer, the father's. As he was the only man she was allowed to come in contact with.
Well, it's really quite simple when you explain it. Oh, by the way, are you going to tell the girl?
I? No, heaven forbid. I shall let Mr. Will Hardy of Birmingham have that privilege. I wrote him the facts of the case this morning. No, he'll be able to persuade her to believe it. I never could.
Holmes, you're a moral coward.
Perhaps, Watson. You remember the old Persian saying, there's danger for him who taketh the cub of the tiger. And danger also for whoso snatches a delusion from a woman.
Now then, Mr. Harris, did you guess the solution?
Well, when Holmes began to talk about typewriters, I started to have an inkling, Doctor. But before that, I'll admit I was pretty much at sea.
Why, Mr. Harris, I'm surprised, and after all my teaching...
Well, how about giving us a hint about next week's story, Dr. Watson?
Yes, Mr. Harris. Next week, I think I'll tell you about a particularly complicated case of violent and untimely death that Holmes and I ran across on what started out to be an uneventful excursion up the Thames. I call it the Complicated Poisoning on Eel Pie Island.
The makers of Clipper Craft Clothes and 1036 leading stores from coast to coast have brought you another in the new series of broadcasts featuring the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Our stories are based upon the character Sherlock Holmes, created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Sherlock Holmes is played by John Stanley.
Dr. Watson by Alfred Shirley, and the dramatizations are by Edith Meiser. Sherlock Holmes is produced and directed by Basil Lochran, with special music by Albert Berman. If you don't know your Clippercraft dealer, write Clippercraft, 200 Fifth Avenue, New York City. Be sure to listen next week to Sherlock Holmes in The Complicated Poisoning on Eel Pie Island. This is Cy Harris speaking for Clippercraft Clothes. This is the network for the Indianapolis Speedway races on Monday, the Mutual Broadcasting System.
That's Case Closed for this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with another hour of old-time radio crime stories. Something from Dragnet and Philo Vance next week, but between now and then, there's all kinds of old-time radio at relicradio.com. Something new every day. Find all the shows listed at the website there, alongside past episodes, links to our forum, Facebook page, Shoutcast stream, and our donate button if you'd like to help support it all. Thank you very much to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.